Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our service online. I am Reverend Jennifer Speer, and this is Living Beyond Limits in our online service this morning. I'm so glad that you all have joined us. So nice to see you in your homes, all warm and snuggly, and still being together, connected heart to heart and spirit to spirit. And it's so great to get to share this service with you. And so we're going to begin the service today. I'm going to read our mission statement. And so if you know it, I invite you to join me in saying it. It says, we are a sanctuary where people can discover and reveal the presence of God within their own being and experience their oneness with all life. Through the realization of this inner presence of love and peace, we give way to the evolutionary impulse of the divine and become a beneficial presence in the world. And so that is really, I think, our biggest focus here at Living Beyond Limits is giving ourselves the tools and awakening to our own spiritual nature so that we can be a beneficial presence in the world. Because what happens is as we awaken to our own divine nature, as we awaken to the presence of spirit that is within us, that is a presence of peace, and that is a presence of love, that is the truth of our oneness with everyone and everything, the truth of our wholeness, regardless of what has ever happened to us, what we've ever experienced, we are whole, our spiritual nature is whole. Because what happens, it's then as we come to recognize that that is who we are and that is what we are, that then when the world is not reflecting peace or love to us or kindness or inclusion, we can be the ones that tap into our own spiritual nature and then are able to bring that forward, to bring that forward and be the presence of love or to be the presence of peace in a situation that isn't peaceful. And so as we do that, we contribute to our own awakening and our own unfolding on this path. And we also contribute to the healing in this world and to the revealing of the presence of the Infinite One in this world and through this world. And so I thank every single one of you for answering this call of your spirit to be walking this path and to be making a difference in this world. Thank you for that. And so as we begin this service today, our practitioner, David Conant, is going to lead us in an evocation as we begin to evoke the awareness of the presence of spirit that is always right where we are, but sometimes we aren't conscious of it, and do a contemplative reading for us. And so I invite you to just kind of settle into yourself, to allow the ringing of this bowl to help you slow down so that you might vibrate with that slower vibration and to find the place within yourself that is just the place of beingness rather than doingness, rather than thinking, just the place within you that is beingness.
As I become centered in the place where I see very clearly the one source that is our divine companion, I know that all life is connected. And that means I can express love and I can experience love to and from others. It also means that love flows into all of my activities and experiences. This is a universal spiritual connection that we all share. There is no limit to our connection with all life. We are one with whatever good flows to us from living beyond limits, from this service today, and from Reverend Jennifer. This is a life principle that cannot be denied. There is one source, one power, one mind, and we are connected with all of it. And it shows. I bless Reverend Jennifer for her devotion to our spiritual growth. I bless Ray for what he manifests in all of our services. I bless all of us. I bless all spiritual paths. And I bless this service. And so it is. The reading today is from 365 Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes. It's titled, Love is the Essence of My Being. Let us love not in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. That is 1 John 3:18. Since God is love, and God is all in all, love must be the underlying principle of life, and therefore in all. This is my life. This is love in me. It is the very essence of my being. Love heals everything, every imperfection of mind or body or environment. Love alone may overcome hatred, anger, envy, and criticism. Where love is, there is no room for any negative emotion. Love is the great adjuster. I know that love is harmony and peace and joy. In it is all good, all that is true, all that is beautiful. It is perfect balance, perfect poise. I empty my mind and heart of all but love. I let love express in me and through me. I let love flow out into my world of thought and action. The love in me shines forth as harmony, peace, joy, freedom, and wisdom. Love binds me to the whole of creation. I find fulfillment through loving. And so it is.
So it is. Thank you, David. So I don't know if you know this, but yesterday was Martin Luther King's birthday. And tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day, a day where we celebrate him and his life and the contribution that he made to our country. Martin Luther King Day commemorates a great man with a great vision, a vision of equality. He created a movement of social equality that was rooted in peace, peaceful actions, peaceful demonstrations, with an unwavering vision and focus. And the season for nonviolence coincides with Martin Luther King's birthday. It starts on his birthday and goes until April 4th, which is the anniversary of the death of Mahatma Gandhi. The season for nonviolence is a spiritual movement whose focus is on attaining peace in this world through nonviolent actions, which was demonstrated by Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi, demonstrated by Cesar Chavez and Nelson Mandela and the Dalai Lama. And so actually, Martin Luther King had six principles of nonviolence. And they say this: nonviolence is a way of life for courageous people. It is an active, nonviolent resistance to evil. Two, nonviolence seeks to win friendship and understanding. The end results of nonviolence is redemption and reconciliation. Three, nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people. Nonviolence recognizes that evildoers are also victims. Four, nonviolence holds that suffering can educate and transform. Five, nonviolence chooses love rather than hate. Nonviolence resists violence to the spirit as well as the body. Nonviolent love is active, not passive. Nonviolent love does not sink to the level of the hater. Love restores community and resists injustice. Nonviolence recognizes the fact that all life is interrelated. And six, nonviolence believes that the universe is on the side of justice. The nonviolent resistor has deep faith that justice will eventually win. And those things seem to be our guiding principles as well, the things that we hold dear in our hearts. The problem is, I think, especially in today's world, is sometimes we don't know how to love the people that we disagree with. We don't know how to love those people that see things from the opposite perspective that we see things. So what happens instead of loving them is we end up judging them. We end up judging ourselves as right and they are wrong. We end up judging people as either good or bad, moral or evil. You know those people that I'm talking about, those people that you're judging right now in the world. Perhaps it's the people who are anti-maskers or the people of the other political party who hold that other agenda, the one that is different than your own. We see things that we disagree with, not just as the problem, but the problem is also that then we think that they are the problem. The people that believe something different than we do. We think that they are the problem and that they are the enemy. Yes? Do you ever do that? Think that they are the enemy? And yet, as beings that are walking this spiritual path, we talk about the fact that we want to be at peace and that we want to be a presence of peace. We talk about the fact that we want to live in unity. And as people that are living this spiritual life and walking this spiritual path, we want to be able to live from our spirit. And we want to be able to include everything as a part of our spiritual path. Because truly we know that everything is a part of our spiritual path. And I know that sometimes we think that it just seems easier to say, yes, I am committed to walking this spiritual path and living this spiritual life, except with those people. I'm willing to be committed to the spiritual path, except in that situation. Except in that circumstance. Yet I know all of us that are here, we are committed to walking the spiritual path. And we are committed to living this spiritual life and from coming from our spirit to the absolute best of our ability. Clarissa Pinkola Estes said this, and I've shared this with you before, but I just think it's so important. She says, in any dark time, there is a tendency to veer toward fainting over how much is wrong or unmended in the world. Do not focus on that. There is a tendency too to fall into being weakened by dwelling on what is outside your reach, by what cannot yet be. Do not focus there. That is spending the wind without raising your sails. We are needed. That is all we can know. Our task is not the task of fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing you can do, one soul to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help immensely. It is not given to us to know which acts or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward the enduring good. What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding more, continuing. We know it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, the second, or the 100th gale. One of the most calming and powerful things that you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. In my uttermost bones, I know something as you do. It is that there can be no despair when you remember why you came to earth, who you serve, and who sent you here. The good words we say and the good words we do are ours. They are the words and the deeds of the one who brought us here. In that spirit, I hope you will write this on your wall. When a great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe, there can be no doubt. But that is not what great ships were built for. And so the title of my talk today is Leaving the Breakwater. And I'm talking about that in order to not lose hope in these crazy times, in order to create the world that we want to live in, we must hold to our vision. We must walk our talk. And we must learn the skills and the tools to enable us to walk our talk and to live from our spirit and to hold tight to our vision. And so we begin with our vision of the world that we want to live in. Carl Jung said, your vision will become clear only when you look into your own heart. So what is the vision that you hold in your heart? What is the highest vision that you hold for this world? I invite you to close your eyes for just a second and to look within and to ask yourself, what is the vision that I hold for this world in my heart? What is the highest vision that I hold for this country? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What is its essence? And so I invite you to go ahead and open your eyes and to write to yourself a few notes about that. What is the vision that you hold in your heart for this country? Going to give you just another couple seconds. So you hold to that vision. You hold that vision and don't let it go, knowing that that vision comes from on high. That vision is born out of the love of the divine and out of that creative love intelligence of this universe, and that you are its vehicle. You are the vehicle for part of that to unfold in this world. Pete Davis, who is a writer and a civic advocate aimed at deepening democracy and solidarity, said, "As I have grown older, I have become more and more inspired by people like Martin Luther King Jr. And not just the Martin Luther King Jr. who confronted the fire hoses in 1963, but also the Martin Luther King who hosted his 1,000th tedious planning meeting in 1967. His 1,000th planning meeting. We hold to our vision even when it takes a long time, even when the road seems rocky, even when it feels like it's the 1,000th time that we've done it and it hasn't yet come to fruition. We hold to that vision." And so last week, I talked about the importance of recognizing that when we have a fear response, that when we are in judgment of other people, that that is a response from our ego. And that our ego's entire job is to keep us alive. That is its purpose, to keep us alive and therefore to keep us safe so that we can stay alive. And that anything that seems threatening to us in any way, whether it's a threat to our health or a threat to our financial status, to our self-image, to our deeply held beliefs, a threat to any sense of well-being within us, our ego sees that as a threat to our existence. And therefore, we have a fear response, we have an anger response, we have a defense response. And in turn, then we label whatever that situation is or that person as bad or wrong or evil. In the book, The Enlightened Ego by Kelly Bennigan, she says, the problem is not that we use the terms good and bad. The problem is that we are unaware that this labeling is a subconscious ego function. And we actually believe that the qualities of good or bad reside within that person or within that situation. We label things so that they can be black or white, so that it is easy to decipher which is black, which is white, which is right, which is wrong, so that we can stay safe. But it's our ego that's doing that. And our ego thinks it needs to do that so we can stay alive. She also says in this book, to seek the truth about ourselves and others takes a more thoughtful and non-judgmental approach. In reality, everyone is doing the best they can given their background and their circumstances. And I would add, and their beliefs. From an individual's perspective, everything they do is in their best interest. They think their actions will benefit them in some way. People do not cause pain and suffering because they are bad. They cause pain and suffering because they are acting from a distorted perception of reality. So what I realized this week is that anti-maskers aren't evil and they're not bad. They are looking at things from a distorted perspective. And me even naming it a distorted perspective still has a judgment on it. They have a different perspective. Perhaps they think that COVID isn't real. Perhaps they think it isn't dangerous. Perhaps they think all us mask wearers have been misled. And I also realized this week, the people that stormed the Capitol a year ago had a different perspective than what I do. They thought what they were doing was right from their ego's perspective. I heard a man's testimony on the radio who was on trial for being one of the insurgents on the Capitol. And at his trial, his testimony, he was crying. And he said, he was my commander in chief. And I thought he was asking for my help. That really shifted how I was seeing things. He was asking for my help. So if those people really in their heart of hearts believe that that election was fraudulent, they saw what they were doing as trying to uphold democracy. And those of us who saw the election as legitimate saw what they were doing as trying to destroy democracy. It's two different perspectives, two different vantage points, two different belief systems, not that they were evil or bad. In this book, The Enlightened Ego, she also says, most of us struggle to develop compassion, particularly towards those we judge as dangerous or inferior. When compassion is difficult, we are struggling with the ego. We are mentally straining to find love in our hearts when they are still dominated by fear. Sustained compassion for ourselves and for others requires a major paradigm shift. The shift is away from dualities, away from right and wrong. Compassion and loving the other requires that we know that we are safe. It requires that we know that we are okay. And like I said last week, we know that we are safe and we know that we are okay because we know that we are eternal beings and that nothing can damage that. Nothing can destroy us and who we are, that we are eternal. It requires that we know that we are already held in the love of the divine. It requires that we recognize that our fear and our anger is our ego's perspective, not our spirit's perspective. I was talking with Margaret Owens on the phone this week, and she asked me, how do you specifically love the people that you disagree with? How do you specifically love the people that you disagree with? How do you live from your spiritual values when you disagree with what they're doing? I think we begin by stopping and asking ourselves, what need might this person be trying to get met through what they are doing? Because remember I said, a person always thinks that what they are doing is going to benefit them. They always think what they are doing is right. So to ask yourself, what is the need in this person that they're trying to get met through this? To ask yourself, how might there be legitimacy in their thinking given their perspective? Even if it's a distorted perspective, even if it's a perspective that I don't agree with, how might there be some legitimacy in their thinking given their perspective? I think it requires that we look beyond our prejudices and our stereotypes and to actually see the person and to see the situation as much more complex than how it is that we've been judging it. And so I invite you to close your eyes again and to ask yourself, think of something or someone that you've been judging, and to ask yourself, what would happen if I looked beyond the stereotypes and the prejudices? What would happen if I looked beyond the stereotypes and the prejudices? And I invite you to write that down. Jot some notes. What would happen if you looked beyond the stereotypes and prejudices? And so you still stand up for what's right. You still stand up for what it is that you believe is good, but you do it with a soft heart. You still stand up for what you believe in and what you think is right and good, but you stand for what it is that you want, rather than standing against someone and what you don't want. You stand for what is right in your own heart. And so I'm going to actually close with a quote from Benningen, who wrote that book, The Enlightened Ego. From an enlightened perspective, we see others as we might a child, as an innocent being doing the best they can. In reality, we are all children on the spiritual path at various stages of development. We are all children walking this path of awakening at different stages of development. You hold that in your heart also. And so I'd like to invite you to join me in what is called the People's Inauguration. I'll read it to you, and then I'm going to have you place your hand over your heart and repeat it after me. But I'll read the whole thing first so you know what you are pledging to. It says, I, fill in your name, do solemnly vow that I will faithfully execute my role in healing, reimagining, and rebuilding our country, and will do the best to my ability to preserve, protect, and defend inclusion, love, and healing for myself and those around me. And so I invite you to place your right hand over your heart and to bring your left hand up and say, repeat after me, I, fill in your name, I, Jennifer, do solemnly vow that I will faithfully execute my role, that I will faithfully execute my role in healing, reimagining, and rebuilding our country, and will to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend inclusion, love and healing for myself, and for those all around me. I thank each and every single one of you for taking so seriously this spiritual path and for your willingness to apply it to your world and to your lives and to the places that seem the most challenging to do that. I really honor and give thanks for each and every single one of you for doing that. And so I invite you to join me in an affirmative prayer right now. And so I take my attention from this world of form, from all the things that are happening, and place my attention squarely on the presence of the Infinite One, recognizing that it is infinite in its ability. It is the very essence of creativity and of intelligence, of wisdom, of expression, and it is the very essence of love. It is the thing that each and every single one of us is made of, and it is the thing that animates each and every one of us. For we are each and every one here, expressions of that one, connected to that source, flooded with all that it is at every single moment. And so today I recognize that we are all indeed connected to each other, heart to heart, spirit to spirit, love to love, life to life. that we are all in this together. And so today we take our guidance from on high. We listen to our hearts and we listen to our spirit, knowing that it is the voice of the divine within us that leads us and guides us to places of inspiration, that leads us and guides us to the words so that we might remember the truth, that leads us and guides us from our own intuitive knowing and from the deep love that is the love of the divine that is without bounds within us. And as we come from love, and as we stand for what we believe is right, we create a world that works for everyone. We create a world that is filled with goodness. And so today we recommit to this spiritual path. We recommit to being a beneficial presence in this world. We recommit to this path of spirit. And so as I look all around me, I also see spirit unfolding itself through the hearts and the minds and the lives of so many people that are bringing greater light into this world, that are bringing greater love and inclusion and equality and righteousness into this world. And for that, I am grateful. And so I keep my focus and my attention on the light, inviting it forward in others and inviting it forward in myself. How blessed we are to be living this life. And for all of this, I give thanks. I release this prayer into the law of the universe, knowing that it is unfolding all around us and within us right now. And for that, I say, thank you, God. And I say, and so it is. And so thank you for joining us here for this service today. It's so wonderful to see all of your shiny faces. We will be here again for the rest of the month on Zoom on this same number. So I look forward to seeing you again. And I don't really have any other announcements. I'm going to be starting a class soon. I'll let you know what that's going to be. It'll come out in an email. And so for those of you who would like to stay and have a little bit of a conversation, I invite you to do so, a little conversation about what you got from this talk, or possibly a new insight you had, or what it meant to you, or anything about it. So if you'd like to stay and have a conversation, I invite you to unmute yourselves and stay. And if you need to go, you have something else, know until we see you next time that you are blessed and that you are loved and that you are held in our hearts, and that we're so grateful that you are part of this family. So blessings to you.